Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is the KFI podcast for Super Sunday, February 4th, 2007. This show was originally heard on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 324. This show was pre-recorded so I could go on a geek cruise. So what you're hearing are the pre-recorded tracks, not the final produced version, but the content's exactly the same. Enjoy. Well, happy Super Sunday, Leo Laporte. I probably can't say that. It's probably trademark, isn't it? Can't even say super anymore.
I am
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What do they say? The big game. You know what game I'm talking about. The Super Bowl. This is Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. If you're not in the mood to watch 18 hours of pregame, I'm glad you're here, because this is the day we talk about tech, and we could talk about a big screen TV for your Super Bowl party, but we could also talk about computers and the internet, MP3 players and cell phones and camcorders and PDAs, anything that has a chip in it or is a part of your digital lifestyle. That's where we're going here today on KFI. Lots of calls today. I just love taking your calls. We're going to go right to the phones because there's so many already. I don't want anybody to be waiting too long. Starting with Roy in Newberry Park. Hello, Roy. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. I've got one that's been kind of bugging me for the last few days.
Okay.
My daughter's motherboard went out on a compact Presario. Okay. I put in a brand new MSI motherboard, put in a fresh install of Windows Home XP, loaded all her programs on it. Everything was working fine. Internet's working fine. Then I upgraded it to Service Pack 2, and it starts freezing whenever she goes on the net. Ugh. And she goes on to sign on to one of her websites that uses Adobe Flash 9. It'll sit there and blink a few times for the cursor. You go to sign on, and the whole machine locks up. Ugh. And no matter what you do, it won't unlock. Then I go to...
Let me ask you something before you go on. How long was it between the time that you installed Windows nice and fresh and clean and installed Service Pack 2?
Well, anytime I install a new program, I would do a restart on the computer and then just keep going.
No. I'm saying in calendar time, days, weeks, months.
Oh, whoa. Well, since it was a fresh install, it was probably maybe 2-3 hours from the fresh install.
Wow. All right. Because, I'll tell you, normally, my normal experience with Service Pack 2 is, yeah, it could cause all sorts of problems just like these on a system that had been used for a while that might even have spyware or other sorts of weird stuff on it. But if you had a brand new, fresh install of Windows XP and you put Service Pack 2 on right away, that didn't happen. And so that's why I'm a little surprised.
Well, what happened is it did it, and I couldn't ascertain what caused it, so I did another fresh install. And after
twice.
Each program, I'd restart it and try the internet, and that's how I narrowed it down to Service Pack 2 that was causing it.
Yeah, that's good.
Then I figured I would do all sorts of upgrades, to Service Pack 2.
Let me ask you another question. So it's a pretty old version of Windows you're reinstalling.
I'm reinstalling one that has Service Pack 1 on it.
That's SP1.
Yeah.
And how are you installing Service Pack 2? Are you doing it from the net?
No, I'm doing it. I have it downloaded. I think it's like 360
Excellent.
Megs.
So you have the CD. Excellent. And was it recently downloaded or was it downloaded a while ago? I mean, when did you download that Service Pack 2?
I tried two versions. One that I downloaded about 8 months ago and one I just recently downloaded.
So it's very new.
I go in the event viewer and I don't see any red X's or anything like that under system or applications to tell me I have
like
a problem.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've got one of those weird, unusual. The only thing that I was thinking is that if you put Service Pack 1 online without a firewall, without patches, you will get infected by a worm instantly, like within a minute. But
what I do is as soon as I put Service Pack 1 and I put a zone alarm and AVG and the
all
first
right.
two things.
Oh, you're too good for. Oh, wait a minute now. Don't do those before you do Service Pack 2.
Oh, no, I'm doing them before Service Pack 2.
No. Don't do that. That's the problem right there. As soon as you have those things modify the system greatly. I suggest my, here's what I would suggest, my order of operations, and I think this could be fairly critical. At least it's your best bet. If you still have problems after this, it's an incompatibility. And there are some known incompatibilities between motherboards and Service Pack 2. I mean, that's just the fact. But try this, since you're doing it anyway. So you restore Windows, get Windows on there, just plain, nothing else, just Windows. Now Service Pack 2 before you do anything else, before you get online even. You don't need Zone Alarm. Service Pack 2 turns on the Windows firewall, and that's plenty. I would stay away from Zone Alarm. AVG's okay. You need an antivirus, but I would stay away from Zone Alarm. So I would say Windows, then Service Pack 2, and see how everything's going. Have you done that ever? Have you just done Windows first, then Service Pack 2, and then try it?
No, I was going to try that tonight.
That's the one to try.
I was going to slipstream the disk.
Well, don't get too fancy, but honestly, the best way to do Service Pack 2 is on a clean system. Service Pack 2 is the rolled-up updates. What I strongly suggest, and this I actually suggest to everybody, this is how you should reinstall Windows. Install Windows immediately. If you're lucky enough to have Service Pack 2 on a disk, as you are, immediately install Service Pack 2. That means you're installing Service Pack 2 on the cleanest possible version of Windows. At that point, you've also got the Windows firewall turned on. That was one of the things Service Pack 2 did that was so very important, was made that on by default. Now, before you do anything else, if you want to test your internet access, go ahead. But before you do too much, I would immediately, as soon as possible, do Windows Update and run that Windows Update until every single critical update is installed. You don't have to worry about any of the other updates. Just get those critical updates installed. It would be a good time after that to update drivers, make sure you have the latest video, motherboard, and so forth, drivers. It may be, in fact, there's a motherboard or a firmware incompatibility with Service Pack 2, so you should check the manufacturer, make sure you've got the latest versions of those. Then, and only after you've got all that, a nice clean version of Windows. In fact, that's a good time to back it up. Maybe make a ghost install, get drive snapshot and make an image of it, because that's a clean install on Windows with all the patches applied. Then and only then would I start installing applications. Patches first. And I don't know, you know, these security applications often modify the systems in substantial ways that are issues, that become issues for Windows. So I would stay away, frankly, from any firewall software. Use the Windows firewall. That's fine. Good antivirus. AVG is fine. It's free. By the way, people are complaining now that, oh my gosh, my AVG is no longer free. If you have 7.1, they are upgrading to 7.5. There's still a free version, but you can't upgrade 7.1. So you have to go to free.grisoft.com and get the latest version of AVG 7.5. Still free. Install that. Update that. And then you can put your applications on. I think that's the order. I really do. I think you got to be careful about what order you do that in. Ed in Ontario, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Leo. I have a question. I got a Mac, and I've had a PC before. And I want to be able to take a bunch of pictures off my PC and put them on a Mac.
Good.
Is there an easy way to do that other than burning a bunch of CDs?
Yeah, there are a couple of ways. If you had a FireWire connection on your PC, by any chance, do you?
No. I only have,
USB.
USB 2.
Yeah. FireWire is nice because you can tell any Mac to become a FireWire extension, external drive. But all right, let's not do that. Probably the best thing to do that would give you some utility down the road, if you don't want to burn a CD, you know, you can network them together, you know, just use an Ethernet cable and network them together. But the best thing to do, I think, if you don't have, I would get an external hard drive for backup purposes anyway. Spend a couple $100. If you've got multiple PCs, these things could be really valuable. For instance, you don't have a backup of those pictures, do you?
No.
Yeah. That's your pictures, man. You can't lose those.
Yep.
If that hard drive dies, you're done. So, you know, this is a good time. Maybe you don't want to do it, but my recommendation would be either to burn those to CD so you have a backup, which is a lot of work, or go out, spend, it's not much, maybe $150 on a 200 gig external drive, a USB drive. Format it Windows style so the Mac can read it and Windows can see it. Put it into your Windows machine, back up everything onto that, move it over to your Mac, use iPhoto importing from that external drive. Now you've got three copies of those valuable photos, and you want to keep doing that as time goes by.
So can I use that same external Well, I think you answered the question. I can use that same external drive to store my, for both. Okay.
As long as you format it for Windows, because Windows don't understand the Mac formatting, right?
Okay.
And it's not expensive. It's really not. I mean, drives are so cheap now. And then you're going to have something that you can use from now on to back up. So,
that's great.
So I think that's the way to go. I mean, yeah, there's lots of ways to do this. I mean, you could make CDs, as you said, you don't want to do that. You could put it on a USB key. You could network them together and just share the drive and copy it, although that's kind of slow. I would think get a backup drive. That's what you really want. Dylan, Massachusetts. Oh, hold on, Dylan. We're going to get to you in a second. He wants to know about open source video editors. I'm ready. We'll do that for you in just a minute, but I have to take a break now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. All right, this is 2-4, hour one, segment two, and 3-2-1. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Now we can say hello to Dylan. Hello, Dylan. Welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
Where in Massachusetts are you calling from?
I'm in Westwood.
All right. Outside of Boston. All right, cool. What can I do for you?
I'm looking for an open source video editor for Windows.
And you want to import video from a camcorder and then edit it, that kind of thing?
I've got VOBs, though, from a DVD.
Oh, so you're taking a DVD and you want to edit that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there are any that will import the VOBs, but of course you can always convert the VOBs into something.
Yeah, I can put them on my iPod anyway, so yeah. I guess I can convert them to MP4 first.
Yeah. There's one called Yashaka. I don't know how you pronounce it. I think it's Hshaka. It is an editing and effects system. And they say,
I did try that one.
And how did you like that one?
It was kind of confusing.
That's one problem with open source software, you know, like the GIMP, which is a Photoshop replacement. Forget it. Try to understand it. It's because they're not great at, they're maybe good programmers. They may not be so good at,
the
interface. They may not be so good at that. Have you tried Videolab?
No, I have not.
That's another one. Are you doing it on Linux, or what are you doing it on?
I'm doing it on Windows, but I do have Linux, too.
Yeah, this is a Linux one.
Oh.
And it's a little bit more like Adobe Premiere than it is. You know, I mean, you might have a little less trouble. In other words, there's a ton of this stuff. I don't know about doing it on Windows.
I did try one for Windows called Avi Demux.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I have, actually. And that's mostly just to demux the VOB files.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but that would get them into AVI format.
Yeah, I was able to do it with that, but, you know, it was, you know, importing took a little while, so I was wondering if there was a better one.
What kind of hardware do you have?
I'm running on a laptop, but
I've
got a gig of RAM.
Yeah, but converting it is CPU intensive.
Yeah, it's got a Celeron. So
yeah, that's why. It's never going to get fast because it's a slower processor. But I'll tell you what, there are a number of, here's a great link on the on Linux.com, easy video creation using only free and open source software, and they list a bunch of them. Cinelera, Cinelera. You use Kino for the DV capture. Of course, you're not going to do that, so you don't care about that. MN Coder for the video conversion. If you want to burn a DVD, it's DEVEDE. So there's, this is the beauty of open source. There's a ton of stuff like this. I have not tried Cinelera, but that looks pretty cool. CINELERRA.org. So there's a lot of choices out there. That's the beauty of open source. The downside is there may be little bugs. The user interface may not be so slick because, frankly, these guys are programmers, not designers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You get what just pays for it, I guess, is the... But I always encourage people to use open source if they can. Why not? Support the community. Patrick, Michigan, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for hanging on, Patrick. You've been very patient.
No problem. My problem is that about 6 months ago, we bought a router because our old Linksys finally just gave up and died.
Yep.
And the new router, it's a Belkin. And I have the encryption turned on because it's 400-foot range as opposed to 150-foot.
Oh, you got a pre-N.
No, actually, it's a wireless G.
Oh, really?
Router.
Well, that's good. That's good distance, boy.
Yeah, and I had to turn it on because even though we have 5.5 acres of trees,
oh boy,
400 feet goes across the road.
Oh boy.
Whereas opposed to the last one, where if you wanted to use the router, you'd be in my yard or in the road, and you know, I don't think people want to stand in the road to get on my internet.
No, I think you're safe. And when I lived on 2 acres, I didn't worry so much about that stuff.
Well, the problem is that every couple of days I'll have to unplug the router and reset it. Otherwise, I can't get on with the wireless with my laptop or my desktop if I restart it, reset it, because both are wireless.
Right. You're using Windows?
Yes.
It could be the router, I should say, but it's probably not. Although I know routers that you have to reset them that way. But let's figure out if it's the router by not resetting the router next time, but by using IP config release and restore, release and renew, because that will tell us if it's just that Windows has lost the router or that there is something wrong with the router.
Well, the thing is, the laptop can see the wireless network. It sees the wireless network just fine.
Right.
And it's got the encryption key and everything.
But it just doesn't have access.
Just will not connect.
That's probably not the router. So here's what you do on Windows. You open a command window, you know, a DOS window. That's start run CMD. That'll open a command window.
Yeah.
And you're going to type IP config, IPConfig /renew. Now, you're going to do this when you've lost the connection.
Okay.
What that does is it drops the settings and redoes the DHCP. It requests a new IP address. If that fixes it, then the issue is not your router. In all likelihood, the issue is on Windows. There are some things you can try to make Windows do this better. Do you see anybody else's? You probably don't, do you? Router?
No, because out here, I'm thinking we're the only one
you
with a wireless router.
Yeah.
I mean, it's we're about 145 feet from the road, and our nearest neighbor is about 300 feet away.
So that's not
side.
There's. I'm going to tell you two things. One of which probably is not going to impact you. If you could see other routers, sometimes Wi-Fi can get promiscuous in Windows and start trying other routers, which could cause you to drop your connection. And so there's two things I want you to do. One of them is not going to be for you, but I'll tell you anyway because other people listening might use it. So you're going to right click on My Computer. And you're going to select management. Now, you have to be administrator to do this. You're going to take the look at the computer management console.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to look at services. And there are two services that can cause Wi-Fi to be sketchy. One, as I said, really isn't your problem. It's the Wireless Zero Config service. Microsoft added this a couple of years ago to XP. The idea was to make it easier to join a network, but it actually makes XP a little bit promiscuous. And you don't want it to be promiscuous. That's always a bad idea. Hey, you know, can you hold on? Because we got to take a break anyway.
Sure.
And I'll tell you the one you might need in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Dang, it was long. I lost track of my time. Oh, no. Oh, I'm so upset. Oh, I got to pay closer attention to these here.
So, oh, I've already seen you lose this a lot.
You know what happens is when they run the tape, then they go wow, and they cut me off in the middle. So here we go. This is segment 3 of hour number 1 in 3, 2, 1. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Before I so rudely interrupted our conversation, we were talking to Patrick in Michigan. He's got problems because he's got a Wi-Fi router dropping connections. He's in the middle of nowhere, can't figure out why. I don't think it's the router. You know, resetting the router does the same thing as renewing the DHCP. It just starts over. But if we try this in the computer and we see that fixes it, then we know the router's still broadcasting fine. It's just the computer's getting confused. So that wireless zero configuration, we're talking about the services menu in the computer management console. Right-click on My Computer, select Manage, click the Services link. Wireless zero config often can cause problems because it causes your Wi-Fi connection to hunt. Your computer starts hunting and it drops it. That's not going to be your problem because there's nobody else. But you might have an issue with the browser. And this is kind of a weird situation. Every Windows network has a what's called a network browser. And there's a master browser in each network. It's one of your two computers will be the master browser. And the master browser is the one that basically maintains a list of which computers are online, what addresses, and so forth. It's critical to the network. Sometimes you can have problems if the master browser should not be on Wi-Fi if possible. Now, both of your computers are wireless, right?
Yeah, my mother's computer is the only one that's plugged directly into the router.
Well, all good. So you do have one wired.
Mm-hmm.
So what you would really like to do is disable the master browser on the wireless ones and leave it on the wired one. And the reason is wireless almost always is in and out. Sometimes, I mean, you shouldn't notice it, but it frequently drops in, comes back. If the master browser is one of those wireless computers, your whole network will go down. But if it's on a wired computer where the connection is much more stable, that will fix that problem. Windows is supposed to avoid using Wi-Fi computers for the master browser, but frequently doesn't. So what you do is you go onto your two wireless computers and you turn the master browser. It's called computer browser. You set the startup type to manual.
Okay.
And that way it won't start up automatically. Leave your mom's to automatic, so she's the master browser.
Mm-hmm.
Can't promise these will work. It could be your router. You certainly should look at firmware updates and so forth. But these, I know these two things can often make a difference in the reliability of a Wi-Fi connection.
Could it also be that the fact that the browser is a Belkin and the wireless cards are D-Link?
It's a G Belkin and a G D-Link.
G Belkin, G D-Link, except for the spare computer in my niece's bedroom, which is a B, but that she's only on that once every month or so.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. When she goes on, though, your whole network will slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah. They all should interoperate. That shouldn't be much of a problem. They may. I'm trying to remember if they use the same chipsets. I don't think they do. I think the D-Link is Broadcom and the Belkin is another chipset. So that could conceivably cause problems, but not likely. The whole idea of Wi-Fi is it shouldn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm. And the fact that the laptop is XP Pro and everything else is XP Home?
That shouldn't matter either. Try those two fixes. Just see if they help. You want to look and see if there's an upgrade in the firmware for the Belkin.
Mm-hmm.
And if it continues to happen, you just bring in the Belkin. These things do happen. There are some routers. No, I haven't heard this with Belkin, but I've heard of it with other routers where you have to do this all the time, and that's not right. You need a new one.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
All right.
Just some thoughts. Thank you, Patrick. So glad you're listening. So glad you're so patient. Let's continue on. Mari in Glendale. Hi, Mari. Is it Mari or Mary?
It's Mari.
Hi, Mari.
Hi. Nice meeting you, Leo.
Well, thanks very much.
Appreciate it.
Oh, of course. I love doing it.
I'm interested in whether I'm going to buy a MacBook Pro or a MacBook.
Okay. I have both, so you're asking the right guy.
Oh, good.
I can tell you exactly the difference.
Okay. I'm also interested in doing multimedia and also music at the same time and doing that when I'm on the road.
Let me tell you why I bought both. I bought a MacBook at first because I really liked the form factor. It's small. I like small for port because I travel a lot. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to carry a big, heavy computer around. Just like you, when I'm on the road, portability is important. And the MacBooks are nice. They have just about the right size screen, although it might be a little small if you're doing a lot of music.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1280 by 800. Good, but they're nice little computers. Now, I got the original MacBook, which was a Core Duo. They have at least upgraded the processor to a Core 2, so the new MacBooks are faster. But they have a lower-end video, and that's really the biggest difference, is the video.
Okay.
It's an Intel GMA 950 video card, which is slow, to be honest. And I didn't realize how slow until I tried to do a PowerPoint presentation, and I was playing back video, and it stuttered. And I said... That was the MacBook.
Okay.
So I didn't upgrade. I said, all right, I'm going to get a MacBook Pro for those times when I need more power. And it is considerably faster.
Okay.
And it has much better video.
Do you have a 7200 or a 5400?
I generally, when I buy a laptop, the trade-off is, you're talking about rotation speed of the hard drive. The trade-off is the faster rotation speeds generally are smaller drives, so you have less capacity.
Right.
And you may also have more heat and battery drain because they're spinning faster. So that's the trade-off. I do have some laptops. I might my Dell laptop is a 7200 because I wanted speed for Vista. But my both my Macs are the 5400s, and I find they're fine. It does make a difference. Tell me again what programs you're going to use.
Well, I'm going to use Final Cut Pro to do probably the original work, and then I'm
definitely
going to...
You definitely want a MacBook Pro.
And then I'm going to actually use either Ableton Live and also Pro Tools for editing music. And then I'll probably do some kind of playback thing, but I don't know what I would play it back on yet. I haven't gotten too far into that yet.
This is, you're doing heavy-duty Pro apps. I think you probably want more power.
Okay.
You're going to need... The thing is, you also need a lot of disk space.
Right.
Because you got video and you got audio files on there, and you're using loops with Live. And, I mean, this is all going to take up a lot of space. So the faster drive is going to be a little small, I think, for you.
Yeah, I was thinking of getting a drive that was not in the Mac.
That's exactly what I'd recommend.
One that was faster.
That's exactly what I would recommend. Well, actually, maybe I'd do it the other way. I'd get the fast drive internally, and that's going to be your operating system and your applications. And then have a data drive that's an external FireWire drive, and that can be a little that can be as fast or slower. Although you probably get a 7200.
So it's better to get the 7200 in the computer.
You want the speed, the hard drive speed. You want for the operating system, the applications, the swap file. Those things need the speed.
Okay.
So the data can be an external, but you really want a boot from a fast drive.
Because they're not making the MacBook Pro with the 7200 anymore. You can't get it.
I thought there was a build to order, but maybe it's only on the 17-inch.
Yeah, they actually took that away when they did the upgrade.
Ah, interesting.
And I was not very happy about that. The only thing I
bet
could
it's
do,
battery life. I bet you anything it's battery life.
Yeah, and the only thing I could do is get a 17-inch and get that 7200, right. But I'm a 5'1" woman.
The 17 is, I confess to having gotten the 17 because I wanted the maximum amount of power, and it's too big. It's like carrying a pizza box around. I mean, if you're tiny, it's really too. You cannot open it on an airplane. I have to travel first class to use the darn thing because you can't open it. So I don't, and I'm not going to pay for first class because I'm a cheapskate. So I'd rather put my money into the computer. So, frankly, that's why a MacBook's great because it's tiny. You can't actually open it on an airplane, but you need the power. I'd say get a 15-inch. Live with a 5400. It's not going to kill you. You will want more data storage. A 7200 RPM FireWire drive will certainly help.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you'll be very happy, but you need the faster video card.
You don't think I'll have any drop frames with the 5400?
Oh, no. You can, and frankly, Final Cut works fine on the MacBook.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when I do music, I do improv, so I want to be able to improv everything at the same time.
Mari, are you a performance artist?
Yes.
Oh, how cool. So this thing is your instrument.
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, you spend the money. You definitely want to spend the money on this. And I mean, that's your tool. That's your keyboard. That's your instrument. So, it's too bad the 17 is so big because frankly, I think you could use that power.
Yeah. Do you think I should wait around to see if they
No. That's why I bought. I was waiting for Macworld and I said, okay.
Do you think they'll come out with a 7200 again? But they're going to...
It's battery life. It's battery life. It's battery life.
Yeah, it's going to have a 100.
Yeah, the Core 2s use so much juice that they had to downgrade the hard drive. I'm convinced of it.
Okay. So you think the 5400
it's fine.
Will work for me?
Oh, absolutely. You're not going to drop frames. Okay. You're not going to drop music. Enjoy. Where can I see you?
Well, I'll let you know when that's happening.
Good. We'll give you a plug.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Mari.
KFI, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. That's cool. All right. Moving on. Going on. Here we go. Down the road. This is February 4th, Super Bowl Sunday, hour number one, segment number four, in 3, 2, 1. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. That is so cool. A performance artist. I love that. I kind of knew a lot of them are doing that now. I mean, you talk to people like the Mark of the Evolution Control Committee and others. Their notebooks are their whole performance. You've got the video, you've got the audio, you've got music. You can improvise. I mean, it's really neat. To me, in many ways, the most exciting, there's so many things that are exciting about technology, but among the most exciting is the creativity it unleashes, the power that these things have. I mean, she's essentially carrying in one notebook computer, a couple of $1,000s worth of notebook computer. She's carrying a video editing suite that rivals basically it's the same one that's used in Hollywood to make full length major motion pictures, and music creation tools that are the equivalent of a full high end recording studio. Millions of dollars worth of hardware 10 years ago in one laptop worth a couple of grand. It's just remarkable. In fact, really, in some ways, the challenge is we've got too much power. It's overwhelming. There's too much we can do. Sometimes the human brain, I think, does better in a constrained situation where there's only a few things. It's hard when there's so many options. I think in a way, kids growing up today have it tougher because there's so many ways they can go than we did, where it was, if you wanted to be a filmmaker back in my day, you'd max out your credit card buying film stock, and an old 16mm camera that you'd rent, praying you could get it for enough days to actually make the film. And then you'd have to process it. This thing would take forever because you'd have to save up more money or sell the Volkswagen bus or whatever and then how would you distribute it? You've got a film, but where are you going to show it? Nowadays, with a consumer camcorder, a laptop computer, and the internet, a kid can do anything. It's great. It's wonderful, but it's just a little, it must be a little challenging. Leroy in Lancaster, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Leroy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I have just purchased a MacBook Pro, 17-inch.
Oh, baby. Yeah, so do you agree with me that that's what Mari should get?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's power.
I am upgrading from a Dell Aspire 9400.
Okay.
And this thing's a screamer.
Oh, yeah. It's got the Core 2 in there. It's just beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great video card.
I was thinking about putting on Windows onto it.
I've done that.
One thing, though, is I went to the store and they got XP, but Vista's coming out. What would you recommend there? Also, it doesn't have a delete key, and Windows a lot of times uses Control-Alternate-Delete. I mean, you have FN backspace to delete, but how do you
You can do
that?
Control. Believe me, you can. It works fine.
Does it?
Yeah. The Control key, the Alt key, Option is Alt, and the Delete key, there is a Delete key on the keyboard. You can, believe me, all of those keystrokes are fine. And there's a little control panel and you can map them. So there's two ways to run Windows on a Mac. One is Boot Camp. That's what Apple distributes. That turns that MacBook or any Mac into any core, any Intel Mac, into a real Windows machine, just like any Windows machine. And Vista will run beautifully with Aero Glass and everything on that 17. I put it on there and it was gorgeous.
Now, I just put the disk in and it loads.
It runs.
Do I have to do anything special?
Well, yeah, here's the step by step, and this is true of XP or Vista. You download Boot Camp. It's a free download from Apple's website. They say it's still beta. It's really going to scream in Leopard, the next version, but right now it works fine. You download it, you run it. Now, the first thing it does, and this works better on a new system, if you've kind of jammed a system with files, you may not be able to do this. You might have to reformat, but on a new system, it'll partition it, divide it into two parts. You decide how big you want the Windows part to be. For Vista, minimum of 10 gigs. I'd recommend 20, possibly 30, depending on how many applications you want to install and how much hard drive space you have left. Then it will ask you for a blank CD or DVD, and you will make a disk with the Windows drivers. That's important because you need drivers for the Mac hardware. Mm-hmm. So you make that disk, then you will reboot and you'll install Windows into that partition. As you would when you're installing Windows, at some point you'll have to use the driver disk. It's actually after it's installed. There are, I think, a couple of little issues with Vista drivers. I can't remember what they were, but they're well documented online. XP is as smooth as silk. Works perfectly well.
That's XP would be a better option?
Well, you don't have the choice right now, but in 2 weeks or 10 days, you'll have the choice. Actually, as you're hearing this now, you have the choice, but as we're recording this, you don't have the choice. What I would do is look online and see how, if they've, on Vista, as I remember, I couldn't run the automatic installer. You have to extract the drivers manually and install them, but it worked fine. XP, there's no problem at all. And I'm sure by the time, I would bet Apple will do an update to make that work. You also then have the option to use Parallels, which is the program that lets you run both Mac and Windows at the same time. And you have 2 gigs in your laptop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you need that much RAM. So then you'll be able to run them both without reinstalling. It actually uses the boot camp install of Windows on the Mac. Now, that does not work with Vista yet, but that's the beta of Parallels, which will be updated, I'm sure, soon. Then you get the best of both worlds. Vista runs very well in boot camp. It's a native Windows machine. It runs a little slower, does not give you Aero Glass if you're running in Parallels. But, I mean, not appreciably slower. On my, it runs as well as it did on the Inspiron, I guarantee you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. 633. This is hour number two. Boy, I'm sorry about those. Those are both a little long. I don't know what to say. Oh, well. This is hour number two, segment number one. I'm going to do Christie's promo in this one. In 3, 2, 1. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Hour two, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI Super Sunday. We're taking calls, talking high tech as we're getting ready for the big game. But heck, you know, forget, just keep listening. Who wants to watch 4 hours of pregame shows? There are going to be some interesting commercials on the Super Bowl today, tech commercials. A number of them. One of them will feature some friends of mine, actually, the GoDaddy commercial. They got some well-known podcasters to be on that commercial. The beautiful Callie Lewis of Geek Brief will be on it. And I haven't seen it yet, but I, you know, the last time she was on a GoDaddy commercial, she was dancing around in her underwear. So I'll be sure to watch that one. And my friends Kevin Rose and Alex Albrecht from Dig and Dig Nation will be on there too. So that's kind of neat. That'll be a Super Bowl ad to watch. One of the things that's kind of interesting about this particular Super Bowl is a number of these ads are user-created. That's the hot thing right now in general in technology. People creating their own movies for YouTube and so forth. And some funny, I mean, some of the best, funniest, well, most well-done stuff I've seen anywhere, TV or anywhere, is on YouTube. So it makes sense. So a couple of companies have gone to their users and asked them to either write commercials or suggest a campaign or even produce them. Dove's going to do that for the Academy Awards, I think. It's an interesting trend. I'll be very curious to see him. So, I mean, there's some creative people out there, right? Some very talented, funny people out there. So that should be a lot of fun. Anyway, let's get back to the phones as we continue on Super Sunday to take your super calls. Frank and Wildemar, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, are you attending or are you watching on your big screen TV?
Neither, actually. I'll be on a boat. And the only problem with watching the Super Bowl on a boat is that there's a big party. I'm on a cruise.
Well, there you go. It's a good thing. Hey, I put a new hard drive in and copied the old one. And the only thing that doesn't want to work are Microsoft Office programs.
Interesting. What do they say?
Well, all the icons change to a .exe file.
Ah.
Now, they will open up eventually, but they give me an error message, and I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, that's weird.
And Outlook won't work at all. I lost all my Outlook.
Oh, that's frustrating. Well, yeah. Your data is still there, I promise you. The Outlook.psd file would be fine.
It is. I put the old hard drive back in and got everything working. But
so how did you copy it over?
I used Western Digital's Data Lifeguard.
Okay, so That's a great tool, and it does a bit-for-bit copy. So you made an identical copy of that drive.
And they're not responding on their
that's
support,
bizarre.
Which is a little irritating.
Oh, yeah, they don't really support that because it's a free program.
Yeah, I understand that, but yeah. It was a little frustrating that
I don't think it's their problem, though. That's what's interesting. I mean, that's making a good copy of that program. I can't think of why it wouldn't run properly. It could be a permissions issue.
Yeah, I looked into that, and it seems like I even have the original discs, and they wouldn't even accept the disc as a load to read.
Oh, they won't?
No.
What does that say then?
Well, you know, I don't have it in front of me. It just did not allow me to go any further.
Cannot do this. You may not. Yep. I wonder if it has to do with, you know, I always suspect anti-piracy measures, authentication measures. Which version of Office was this?
10. Oh, I'm sorry, XP. XP.
XP. Oh, no, there's no authentication in XP. It's an old version. But that's weird. It should just work, and you cannot reinstall it.
It would not.
I think it's permissions. I think the only thing I can think of is permissions. You log in with the same login, that all behaved the same, right?
Everything else seems to want to work just peachy.
You can see your documents. You can open the documents.
Eventually, I'll be able to open the documents, yes.
So it's
but
not,
what it does when I try to open up a Word document, as an example, it'll tell me that it'll deny that access, and I'll just wait several seconds, and it'll open the document. No.
Okay, now I think what's happening now is I'm a little worried about the new hard drive.
Okay.
There may be damaged sectors on the new hard drive. If it doesn't work right away and it works later, do you hear the hard drive laboring in between times? You hear it going trying to get that file?
No.
You don't hear any additional access during that time.
Nothing.
It's dead silent. It just waits, and then finally it opens.
Well, yeah, I'd say maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seconds after I see the error message, it'll probably open up. Well, not even that short a time. Maybe a little bit longer than that.
I'm a little concerned about where those files live. You know what you might try doing? What's going on here? You might try you could move the data. The problem is it sounds like you've got bad sectors on that disk, and either the program or the data files are on those bad sectors. The disk is working extra hard to open it. At first, it fails. Finally, after some labor, it gets in there, and they're opening. The question is it an application that's on the bad sectors, or is it the data? You could try moving a data file, create a new. Can you open the program standalone without any data file? Like just double click. Can you just open Word and with a blank file?
Well, I will open Word, a Word document.
Not a Word document. Just open Word. Just
It'll want to open up a .exe file, is what the icon shows. And
that's
what,
okay. In the Start menu, you click Start. You go to Microsoft, you know, Programs, Microsoft Office, Word, and you click that. What happens?
Yeah, it'll tell me I have an error, and I'll wait whatever 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds, and a blank document will come up.
Aha. Interesting. And that happens with Excel, too?
Does in Excel, yes. In Outlook, nothing.
And Outlook doesn't open at all?
Not at all. Just a complete error message and won't let me go anywhere.
Can you try uninstalling those programs? Have you tried that?
No, I have not done that.
Try uninstalling them just to see if they uninstall. The other thing I would definitely do is a check disk on there. Right-click, open my computer, right-click on the drive, select properties, select tools, and scan the disk, and actually do it either on a reboot. I'm worried that the disk has some data damage. Frankly, that's what it sounds like to me. And if you have trouble and then it works, usually that's because the hard drive was having trouble reading certain parts of the drive. Then it didn't give up. It kept trying. Eventually it did. That's an indicator that you got bad sectors. It could just be a bad format. Did you format the drive before you did the data copy?
No.
You might try, if you wanted to start over, have you done a lot of work on this new drive, or is it just...
No, I've put a secondary drive right now.
I would try, here's what I would do. I would put that drive in and do a thorough format on it. Not a quick format, but a full format.
Okay.
And then do the copy. The format will map out any bad sectors, and I'm telling you, that's what it sounds like. And it's a new drive. Doesn't mean there won't be bad sectors. Every drive comes from the factory with bad sectors. That's normal. Especially the larger the drive, the more the bad sectors you're going to have. So that might be a case where they weren't mapped out. The bit copy that the Western Digital Tools did just put them in the same space that they were on the old drive, and that turns out those sectors weren't so hot. They were barely readable. So I would do a full format on that drive and then try the copy again.
I will give that a shot and see what happens on that.
That's one where, you know, if you had SpinRite, I don't want you to spend $80 just for this, but if you had SpinRite, that's when I would bring, you know, I haul out SpinRite in a case like that, and it does a very thorough, low-level check of that drive. It will, if it can read the data, it will move it to a new sector that's good and map out the old sector, and that's exactly what you want to do. I think I'm betting what happened is the drive was unformatted. You did the bit copy. It just put them on the same sector they were on the old drive. You need to do a full format, make sure those sectors can be formatted. They'll be mapped out. Then you do the copy, and it'll be smart enough to say, oh, wait a minute, I can't put it in the same space. I'll put it over here. I bet you that'll help. Otherwise, it's kind of odd. It's almost inexplicable behavior. I would prefer to see you do that than, say, mess with this drive anymore, because if it's not reliable, you don't want to put anything more on that drive. And sometimes, you know, it's a new drive, I know, but sometimes drives, they're bad. Some percentage of all drives arrive DOA or failing or not in good shape. That's just natural. And, you know, it's bad luck that you got the one. I don't think it's a huge number, but it's you know, it happens. That's why I always say back up, because all drives fail. Some sooner than others. Some fail on the way from the factory to your hands. And some don't fail for 20 years, and you don't know which kind you've got. Let's take more calls in just a bit. Super Sunday with Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. This is hour two, segment two in three, 6 minute segment. 3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Leo Laporte. This is KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. We are talking about technology. When it goes right, when it goes wrong, 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. On a Super Sunday, Roger's in Los Angeles. Hello, Roger. Welcome to KFI.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good so far. Listen, camera phones is my question.
Right.
Every time I go to an event or something, you know, we're there and oh, we can take pictures, and where's the camera? I don't know.
I did the same thing. I end up having more camera phone pictures just because I've got the camera phone with me.
Well, yeah, and then unfortunately, my camera phone, the pixels are...
They look terrible.
Just really, yeah. So what's the best, the highest we can get right now?
They are now, they're, get 2 megapixels, 1.3 megapixels is standard now on almost everything.
Right.
And that's pretty good, but, you know, it's not just the megapixels, unfortunately. It's also the quality of the lenses, and they're usually, you know, not such great lenses.
Right.
So even with 1.3 megapixels is 640 by 480. That's VGA quality. Apple's new iPhone is 2 megapixels, and we're starting to see a number of 2 megapixel phones coming out. In Korea, where they have a lot of bandwidth, in South Korea, you're seeing 4, 5, 6, I think there's a 7 megapixel phone. But they'll never sell it here because it would take an hour to upload it on the networks that we've got here. So that's not going to happen. I would, if you really want the best resolution and the best quality, I would look at the Nokias and the Nokia N90, the N93. They're a little bulky, a little big, but they have Nokia has decided with the N series, we're going to make a multimedia smartphone, a phone that does take not only good still images, but takes really good video.
Right.
And it's just a little bigger than the regular phone. They're kind of weird because they flip all over the place so that you can turn them into a kind of a camcorder form factor. Or, you know, you could do different things with it. I just think they're really great, and they really look spectacular. I think
Are they pricey?
Not more. Yeah, a little. To be honest with you, I don't know exactly what they're charging for them. As always, the cell phone company will subsidize it. Who's your carrier?
Singular.
I don't know if Singular carries them or not. I mean, the nice thing about
Singular... They do carry some Nokia, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, everybody has some Nokia. The question is, are they going to carry the N series? Let me just check real quickly. I actually... I'm looking to get one of these Nokia phones for this very reason. I want something that takes better pictures. And I think right now they're the best out there right now. Let me just see what phones and devices on the Singular site, if they have the N series. Well, they got a lot of 52 camera phones. But the problem is most of them, it's not even the megapixels. It's just the gosh darn CCD, you know, the pickup and the And the lens is made out of the same kind of plastic they made Fisher-Price toys out of. And it's smeary. The color reproduction's bad. I mean, this is just the, you know, the way it is. Doesn't look like... I don't know what the best camera phone they would be. You might want to look at one of the LGs. I think the LGs have pretty good camera phones. It looks like most of them are 1.3 megapixels. That's kind of become the standard.
Right.
I don't see anything bigger than that right now on singular. I'm not sure who's carrying the N series.
Well, I just my contract is up at singular too. Ah. So I have the option of opting out. So
now you have your choice. You have.
Right.
Uh-huh. In the words of you.
Although the package I got back then, you know, the deal, it's pretty good, but.
Well, one thing to remember is that when your contract runs out, you can always go to your phone company and your cell phone company and say, my contract's running out. I want a new phone for free.
Oh, okay.
And you can drive a pretty hard bargain with them. They want to keep you because you know what? The phone is not how they make money off you, as you've
exactly.
I'm sure figured out. You spend right. a lot more.
It's like printers.
Exactly. They spend a lot more in connection fees and everything else than you do buying a phone.
Right.
So I would say, I'm looking at the singular devices and I don't see anything that just knocks me out, unfortunately. But I will see who sells a Nokia and how much. I'll have to do a little research on that one on the net. And okay. The N90 or the N93. I'm getting an N93 just because, in fact, I'm going to try to get it before I head out. I'm doing Regis and Kennard. We're taping ahead. I'm just a little dirty little secret here. So I've already done Regis and Kelly, but I'm off on a cruise right now. And I wanted to have this, you know, this stuff for posting on my blog, high quality images. I don't want to. The cool thing about a camera phone is you've got a wireless connection. So you can upload to your blog, to your website, right from the phone. So I'm really, my interest at this point is it's almost citizen journalism now, where you're carrying around a phone that happens to give you incredible video, incredible pictures, and you can upload them. And that's kind of neat. I mean, that's, you've got a little miniature studio in your hands. And that's the thing that intrigues me a little bit about these kinds of phones. I want to play with them. But I'll tell you what, I will have, if next week or the week after, I'll have a report, because I expect to have one the next week or so. And I'll let you know. And you can watch my blog and see. The Nokia N93 is $700 unsubsidized. But that's the problem, is you never know how much it's going to cost because the phone company that you get it from subsidizes these phones. But it's a little pricey. That's the N93 is a 3.2 megapixel camera. GSM, so that means it would be either Singular or T-Mobile. You get it unlocked, you put your chip in there, put your Singular chip in there, and it'll work. But it's not going to be cheap. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. This is February 4th, hour 2, segment 3 in 3, 2, 1. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. We're talking tech. We're having a great time telling you all about camera phones, GPS, home theater. Cameras, everything we can, everything with a chip in it. That's what we talk about here on this show. Let's get back to the phones. And Ann in Redondo Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Ann.
Oh, hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
On a scale of 1 to techie, I'm at a 2.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. I'll try to keep my words of single syllables.
Well, adult education is helping me, and of course your program is helping me immeasurably, so thank you very much.
I bet you're more of a geek than you know. You might surprise yourself.
Well, I'm tooling around on my Windows here, and under HP Pavilion C Drive,
yeah.
On the Windows folder, I open that, and I have about a list of at least 200 items that come up.
Ah.
That puzzles me, and I think it may be slowing down my system. Are they? Can I delete them?
Well, I'd be really careful about deleting them. You're talking about the very root directory, the top directory,
right under Explore. You know, right.
Yeah.
Right.
You shouldn't normally have a lot of stuff there.
Oh gosh, it's just awful.
Yeah, but some stuff is necessary there. Often programs use that as a temporary folder. Well, they shouldn't. They're supposed to look and see where you want temp's files stored. And there's normally, there's frankly, a folder called temp. And that's where stuff's supposed to go.
This isn't it, though.
I know. And sometimes, sometimes programs will just unzip themselves and stick themselves there. Sometimes, you know, by accident, people put stuff there. But the problem with just willy-nilly deleting it is there may be stuff there you need.
Well, what's so puzzling, they all start with uninstall.
And okay, and the dollar sign, uninstall dollar
the sign.
Right. Yeah, you can delete. All the stuff that says uninstall dollar sign, you can delete.
What is it?
Well,
get there.
there are uninstaller logs. I mean, actually, you probably don't want to delete them because then you won't be able to uninstall those programs.
We're going around here.
So, I mean, you can delete them. They're not necessary to the operation of the system.
Okay.
But you might want them because if you decide to uninstall it. But the good news is they're all small, right?
Yeah, well, I open them up and it gives me no information.
No, there's nothing. Don't open them up. There's just nothing there. That's just
nothing there, right?
Yeah, they're log files.
Okay.
They're very small. They're not slowing down your system. They're not important.
Okay. Yeah. They just seem to be growing. The list seems to be growing.
It shouldn't be getting put there, but unfortunately, it sounds like they are.
Okay. I thought it might have something to do with Microsoft updates.
It does. It's exactly what it has to do with.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think there's... Normally, you don't need them.
Okay.
But I hate to have you remove them and then call me in 3 weeks and say, I can't remove, I can't uninstall this update.
Yeah, I was apprehensive about it. That's why I'm calling
you. In general, it's better not to mess with things like that. It's so tempting.
Mm-hmm,
But remember, your computer is not a closet. It is not something that needs to be tidied.
Okay.
All right. I know we all want to tidy it up. People are always calling and saying, well, give me a good registry cleaner. I want to clean up my registry. Chances are you cause more problems doing that than not.
Fear not, Anne. Just leave it alone.
Leave it alone. Everything else is working okay?
Oh, wonderfully. I wanted to buy the new 2007 Word over at Barnes & Noble's today. But I tell you, that textbook makes War and Peace look like a short story.
They've really changed Office considerably, I think, for the better. But it's all new. You got to relearn everything. They've changed the menus. They've got this tool ribbon, which is, I think, a very big design improvement.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, it is a bit of a learning curve. Now, you don't have to get the thick book.
Okay.
You know, there are a number of good... One thing about choosing a computer book is that we all have different learning styles.
Mm-hmm.
And there are computer books for every learning style. Publishers have really learned that some people want the 700-page everything but the kitchen sink book.
Mm-hmm.
Those tend to be the geekiest, nerdiest folks who just, I want a book that has every command. I would stay away from those unless you're one of those geeky, nerdy people that needs it.
I'm still a two.
they're not for twos. There's an excellent series called The Absolute Beginner's Guides. Now, you're not an absolute beginner, but what they've done with these books is they've made them very accessible. They're task-focused. They're not thick. They're not absolutely not complete in the sense that they have every command, but they have the commands that you will use the most, and they'll give you a sense of confidence. They tend to use a lot of illustrations. They look like recipes. They have step-by-step stuff.
Okay.
I think they're excellent. The Absolute Beginner's Guides, I recommend them all the time.
Guides? I could get them at any bookstore, perhaps?
Yeah, it's a series. It's from, I believe it's from Q, but just look for it. But it's an imprint called The Absolute Beginner Guides.
I have made a note of that.
Yeah, and they're not the 1,000-page, intimidating. You don't want that. No, you don't need that.
No, I put it back.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you're not going to read that.
No,
not unless you need to go to sleep. Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to read that. I think people buy that as a security blanket. I don't think anybody actually reads those. Having written some, I know that nobody actually reads them.
Okay.
All right, Annie.
Thank you. Okay, thanks for your help.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's fun. You know, if you browse the bookstore, don't buy the book that you're worried about. Buy the book that makes you feel good. There are a number of really excellent... The Quick Start Guides are very good, also task-focused. Those are from Peach Pit Press. I think they've come up with some very good ways of, if you're a visual learner, the Absolute Beginner Guides are good because they have a lot of illustrations, a lot of screenshots. Find the one that fits your learning style. And books can be very helpful. I think people are going to need some help adjusting to this new Microsoft Office. It is, frankly, very, very different. But having used it now for a while, I have to say I like it. I think it's. I think they did a good job. I was very skeptical. In fact, I was. Like a lot of people, I'm adverse to change sometimes, and I guess, what are they doing? They're getting rid of our menu. I know that menu. You're getting rid of the menu. I need the menu. But as I've used the ribbon bar, I've found it to be a very good adaptation. John in Fountain Valley, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, John.
Well, hello, Leo. Leo, first of all, I'd like to say I really enjoyed your television programs before Tech TV went away. And you sound like a gentle gentleman and a nice guy on the radio. So I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're trying to get the TV shows back on the air. You know, I do it up in Canada, and we're working on it. We may get them back someday.
Well, can I get it on like YouTube or something?
They are on Google TV, but we charge 99 cents. And I'm going to say don't buy them yet because we're revamping the show. It's going to really be beautiful. It's going to be in high def. I've got an idea about making the show more accessible. I think the new shows, which will be called The Lab with Leo Laporte, it'll be on. It's seen in Canada and Australia. I have confidence we'll get it on in the U.S. in the next year or so.
Well, terrific. I have actually three kind of things for you, and two of them are pretty much related.
Okay.
The first one isn't, and I'll leave it. I'll start with that one.
All right.
And what it is I bought a computer, and then I buy them, and I get them with all this junk on them that I don't want.
Oh, I hate it when they do that.
And I'm using XP Windows Center,
Windows Media Center, yep.
Right. So what I did is I did what I usually do when I get a new computer, which is to clean it off and reinstall Windows and install the software that I want.
Yes.
Okay. Well, apparently this computer, and you mentioned this on a show before your trip, this computer apparently did have a hidden partition.
Uh-oh. You wiped it out, didn't you?
Right. And so now I can't use System Restore.
Yeah, that's right. Who makes
it tries. It looks like it's doing it. And then it just says unsuccessful.
Who made the computer?
The manufacturer is Medion. I believe they're in Canada or Germany. Medion.
Yeah. Those are actually kind of neat computers. Are you happy?
I like it.
Yeah. I don't know what their system is, so I can't tell you how they've done this. But sometimes they do have a hidden partition that contains nothing more than kind of a certification that this is an actual Medion computer. And if the System Restore disk doesn't see that.
Oh, no. I apologize. I'm not talking about the System Restore disk.
Oh, just the System Restore.
Within Windows XP.
Oh, interesting. Well, that shouldn't require anything. That's.
I was thinking maybe they put maybe Medion put that part of Windows in that sector.
Hang on the line because I do want to address this. We need to take a break, but I do want to address this. That is sometimes cause for concern when System Restore is broken or disabled.
Yeah, it's not working.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Hold on, okay? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Hey, Leo.
Yeah.
Real quick, we'd like to know about how much longer you'd like to continue.
Well, I'd like to finish it, which means it'll probably be another 25 minutes.
Perfect. No problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think that's right. It's half an hour. It's 20, 32. It's going to be another 38 minutes. Can you hang on that long?
Oh, absolutely. No, okay. we're just wondering about callers. Should we continue?
Yeah, keep them going. Oh, yeah. We're only on segment four for hour two, so I want to get the whole show. So I got five more segments to tape.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is
February 3rd.
No, sorry. February 4th, hour two, segment four. This will be a 6-minute in 3, 2, 1. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. A reminder that the 5th annual Southern California Linux Expo is back. I love the Linux Expo. It's going to be at the Westin Los Angeles Airport Hotel February 9th through 11th next week. If you've ever been to one of these, you know what to expect. If you've not, get ready. I mean, it's everything you'd ever want from your open source community. Experts on hand to discuss things like open software, crashing security, viruses, what's new. If you've never seen Linux, it's a chance to really see it demonstrated by pros. I'm telling you, you owe it to yourself to find out what Linux is all about. If you'd like to win a pair of passes to this 2-day event, you can enter by visiting KFI. That's KFIAM640.com. Click on contests and you'll see a chance to win passes. The Linux Southern California Linux Expo. It's coming up February 9th through 11th. Now, we were talking before the break with John in Fountain Valley. Now, you, what happens? Is it grayed out when you can't do system restore? Does that mean that when you go to it, it won't run? What happens?
No, it goes through. It acts as if it's running just fine. You know, okay. I have restore points,
okay,
including restore points that I've created,
and you can see them.
And I can see them. They're highlighted. And then when I click on them, it goes through all the process, changes the messages, tells me it might reboot. You know, goes on through everything. And then at the end, it says system restore was unsuccessful.
Oh boy. First of all, I have to tell you that that is a symptom sometimes, not always, of a virus or spyware.
I was concerned about that.
Why would they not want you to restore? Because they don't want you to get rid of them. Mm. And so that can be a problem. I mean, there are other problems, of course, the system restore can have. But I do always, so I would make sure that you have checked, you scan, you have an antivirus, you have anti-spyware, all that, right?
Yeah, I purchased Nod 32, but I haven't installed it yet. I'm running the Norton.
Okay, so but you have some antivirus.
Yes.
A couple of things that you want to consider. First of all, try starting in safe mode and doing it.
Okay.
That will turn off some things that might be interfering. For instance, Norton, in fact, will interfere. Zone alarm will interfere. There are programs that will interfere. I'm looking at a troubleshooting website for System Restore that has about 30 different things to look at. So I'm not going to go through them all. But let me see if I can.
But if I Googled System Restore,
well, it's on mvps.org, which is a really great site.
Okay,
for
terrific.
Tech support, for Windows specific tech support. The guy who wrote this is, let's see, what's his name here? I want to see if I can find it for you. Because Bert K, B-E-R-T-K. And he has literally, I mean, it goes on and on. But one of the first things to try is safe mode. And that covers a multitude of sins because that turns off a lot of stuff running in the background.
Right. And it's Mary Victor Papa Sugar.
Yeah, MVP is the Microsoft MVP people, and mvps.org. And actually, if you go to bertk.mvps.org, I don't know. Let me see if there's a link there, but he's the guy who wrote. Yeah, here you go. And it talks about System Restore and what to do if System Restore does not work. bertk.mvps.org.
Here's my go ahead.
Go ahead.
Here's my second two, and they're related, but, you know, kind of distantly. They're cousins. I'm running, as I told you, Windows XP Media Center Edition, and I have been diligently collecting domain names of spammers and putting them into the, blocked senders folder.
Yeah, it's not going to do you any good at all. How do you know that that's their domain name?
Well, first of all, can I delay answering that question? Because that's part of the second one.
Okay.
All right, and
I'll tell you the reason I ask is because the return address from spam is guaranteed forged.
Okay, yes, and that's my second problem, actually. Okay, but what's happening is when I go to update that folder with new domain names, and I try and I click on block senders, it pops up, and I don't have any domain names in it.
Well, now I am.
And then I am
worried a little bit about your system. Yeah.
Okay. I save them on the side and I reload them, but I'm up to like 30,000 domain names.
Well, they're no good to you. In fact, my domain name may be in there because
mine too.
Yeah, because the way spammers work, they forge domain names using existing domain names, and I get a lot of bounced mail saying that I'm spamming people from one of my addresses, but it's not me. It's the spammers borrowed an address of mine. So that's not going to work. However, I'm a little concerned that it's not remembering them. Tying that with the system restore problem, frankly, this is another symptom of infection because they don't want you to block things, right?
Right.
You don't have full access to your system. It sounds to me as if there's a reason you don't have full access to your system, and it doesn't sound good, I'll be honest with you. So okay. I think well, these are I all. I think they're all tied together. Is what I'm saying. Hey, I've got to run. News is next. These symptoms conceivably are a problem. I'll be honest with you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I'm sorry I had to do that to you, John, but we can talk briefly now before I go on to the next segment.
Oh, okay. Real quick. The third problem is, in fact, I own two domain names that are hosted.
Right.
And I'm getting dozens, if not hundreds, of return to senders. Yeah.
Nothing you can do about it.
Boxes.
Yep. Nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. I figured if eBay couldn't do anything about it,
no.
I probably couldn't.
I get it, too. And what they do is they use a random generator. So it's random characters at, in my case, twit.tv. And I
right.
get them, and it's just...
By the way, I love that site, too.
Thank you.
And, you know, what you should do, you should offer some people, like at this Medion, I was on tech support with them for about an hour on hold.
Yeah.
Why not run your show instead of Kenny G for an hour?
That's a good idea. I should suggest that to them. At least
I'm telling you, I'll promote your program, and I would be getting some training.
That's a great idea, John. Thank you. I'll have to get somebody on that and working on that. We're going to run because I don't want to keep people on hold for our personal conversation, but thank you. And I would absolutely scan your system thoroughly, thoroughly. This is February 4th, hour three, segment one, 10 minutes in 3, 2, 1. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, Super Sunday. It's getting quiet in here. People are drifting off. Don't go! Don't go. We'll talk more about tech. Come on. Look, you can have the TV on, so you won't miss anything, but just keep listening. Vincent Burbank, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Question. I got Skype out so that I could dial from my computer to my own cell phone and download my messages or my office phone. And the goal was to save my messages on my computer, like in WAV files or whatever.
Right.
But I can't figure out how to actually now.
Now, how do I record it?
That's right.
I can hear the darn thing, but how do I record it?
Yeah, my several attempts have not worked.
Well, there's a couple of things you could do. It depends on the capability of your sound card. Most modern sound cards can directly record the output of a WAV file or of Skype. So what you have to do is set up your mixer to record the WAV output. And then you need some recording software that will do that. A good choice that's absolutely free. There are a number of good choices. Audacity is a free open source editor, but maybe that's not, you know, more than you need, but certainly it would do that. That's Audacity, AUDACITY .sourceforge.net. That's a very good program, and that will do it. Or you can use Music Match, which is actually a very good music library program, an MP3 player, and that also will record. But what you have to do is set up your sound card, use the mixer and the sound card to record. You know, if you go to Options, Recording Setup, and then set that up to record the WAV output of Skype. You won't be able to... people do this all the time, by the way. In fact, I do it for podcasts. But you can't record both sides of the conversation. In your case, you don't care because you only want
right.
You only want the voice message. It's funny that you should say that because we had a caller. I don't know. Maybe it was you.
Yeah.
It was. All right. Yeah. Oh, good. All right. Because I remember we weren't, I came up with a bunch of Fakatka ideas. And then somebody in the chat room said, well, he could just use Skype. Of course. No. Well, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad you heard that. I'm sorry we haven't yet figured that out, how to do it.
Well, I'll go ahead and I'll plug in Audacity because I've got Cakewalk, Pyro, which is just
that should
what I
do
use.
It. That should do it.
Well, then I guess I'm missing exactly how to set my tuner because I go into the
mixer.
The mixer. Because I go into the Windows mixer and it doesn't do anything, but that's not what I need, I guess.
Well, it's probably in Cakewalk, it's probably the audio hardware setup in Cakewalk. You have this is a little bit more powerful program. It's not using Windows Mixer. So you have to have the audio hardware set up, which is probably in the preferences of Cakewalk.
Okay, I looked through there and I
didn't
thought
see
I,
it, huh?
I found everything, but I will try looking again.
I tell you, I'm not an expert. I've used Cakewalk, but I don't remember all the settings in there. In general, when you use a pro audio program like that, it does its own audio hardware setup. And in fact, it should be easier to record the output of your computer directly on your computer. I mean, worst case, you can always hook up something. Well, you want to save it on your computer, though, I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. That shouldn't be a problem. If, let me think. Because it's kind of a loop back situation, right? You're looping back the audio.
Exactly. And I guess I could go to the back of the computer and take out my speaker cord and stick it into my...
You could actually get, and I've done this, you shouldn't have to, but you can get an older sound cards. You could get a, you know, two-pin connector, you know, a mini jack connector to a mini jack connector and take the out, exactly, speaker output, put it in the mic input.
But I hate to have to do that every time.
No. I'm almost positive, unless it's a really old card, but that you need full duplex. But I'm almost positive that you can do this, and with Cakewalk, pretty straightforward. Let me see if I can find it somewhere and put it in the show notes for you. But
okay, great.
Yeah. Hey, we're almost there. I feel bad for you. You've had these messages on your phone now for months.
I know, and I keep having to, you know, delete more and more, but I keep wanting to say.
One step forward, two steps back. We'll get there. It's basically going to be a loop back, and it's, I'm pretty sure, I'm just trying to think, if you in Cakewalk, if you told it that the input for the recording was that sound card, the mix out of that sound card, I think you'd get it.
Okay, I will go back in there and check that.
I think you'd get it. I can't imagine why you wouldn't. Good luck.
All right. Well, thanks, Leo.
Stay in touch. I'll talk to you again in a couple of months. Vince is trying to get his messages off his cell phone recorded. Seems like there should be an easier way to do that. The new iPhone will do that, they say. Yeah, you'll have your voicemail message. Actually, and it's because Singular is going to support this. You'll have access to your voicemail messages as audio files. Random access audio files on your phone. Lynn, Pasadena, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
On a score of 1 to tech, I'm roadkill on the information highway.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll be gentle.
I just bought a new Dell Inspiron 1501 laptop.
Okay.
I have a Canon LBP460 laser printer that I don't want to throw away unless I have to.
I don't blame you.
And when I took out the floppies to set it up for the laptop, it said it's for Windows 98.
Yeah. You need to get a more updated, but you could download it from Canon's site.
Okay.
You don't need those floppies. The good news is, in fact, you shouldn't use them because those are obviously very old. Tell me again what printer it is.
Oh, my.
That doesn't mean it's bad. Well, in technology, it can. Fortunately, it doesn't in humans. So what's the printer again?
It's Canon LBP460.
So that's pretty old, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that's old. I'm hoping that we can find a driver for it for Windows XP. You're going to have to go to the Canon site, and you're going to look for the printers section, and you're going to look for the drivers. And then you're going to want to just hope that they have put the drivers online for that older printer for XP. This is unfortunate. This is the sad thing, unfortunately.
I know. Everything has built-in obsolescence.
Built, and there's no reason it should, but they do. Yeah. You're going to have to dig. And the other thing about Canon is they kind of hide all this stuff. But you're going to have to kind of dig through the site. But basically, let's see. How do I get there? You click Canon USA, which is usa.canon.com, and then you click products. Actually, I'm sorry, you click support, and then you click in the left, it'll say drivers and downloads. It's almost always to get, by the way, better to get a driver from the web than to use one that came with the printer, because they update these a lot. And as you can see, yours isn't even up to date for the printer you're using, and for the operating system you're using. So you really do need to get a more recent one.
Alrighty.
So select consumer products, I think, and then go to downloads. And I hope that they'll have a driver for the 460. If they don't, then just use the latest one they've got. The Windows 98 probably would work, but we want you to get the most recent one. Just get the one that's the latest out there.
Okay.
All right.
I sure do. Thank you.
I thank you for calling.
And how do you keep so much information in your head?
It's spilling out very rapidly, actually. I don't know how much longer I can do this.
Well, I marvel.
Thank you,
Lynn. I really do. Okay.
I feel like the scarecrow, and the stuffing is just coming right out of my head. But I try my best to keep it in there. Fortunately, you know, nowadays, when I started doing this show in 19, not on KFI, but just doing computer talk radio in 1990, was it? We couldn't get online and search the internet for answers. So you really did have to have it in your head. There was no, if you didn't know it, there was no way to find it. But I have to confess that as we talk, I'm often on the net looking for answers. And if you know where to look and you know what you're looking for, that's the difference. I think, you know, you could do the same thing, you know, and not Lynn could be looking for days under by searching for Canon LDP 460. So it helps to, you know, kind of know where to look. And then you can find what you want. I'm looking right now on the Canon website, and they, let's see, under this printer, Windows XP compatibility, and yeah, it looks like it does support it. Well, it says no driver available. I hate that. Why do they do that to us? Leo, this is just, you know, let's see what the most recent driver is. Oh, boy. Windows 95 and 3X systems. You might have to buy a new printer. I got bad news for you. It doesn't look like Canon really wants to support that printer any longer. It's pretty old. What you might, and this is probably not for anybody who's roadkill on the information superhighway, you might be able to get some open source Linux drivers for it to work with XP, but boy, this is for much more advanced users. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. This is February 4th, hour number 3, segment number 2, in 3, 2, 1. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and we are taking calls on Super Bowl Sunday. You don't need to watch 3.5 hours of pregame. Come on. Hang in there with me. Come on now. Fortunately, there's lots of callers. I don't know why. John in Forest Falls, welcome KFI, Leo Laporte. Hello, John.
Hi, Leo. Leo, I just I got a new widescreen monitor.
Ooh.
And
how do you like it?
I like it. It's nice. It's just I think when I installed it, something went wrong. It's working, but when I go to max resolutions, this one is 1440 by 900.
Yeah.
It makes my I don't know if this is supposed to do this, but it makes the icons on the
yeah, they get really small, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Well, that is exactly what you'd expect.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, because think about what's happened here. You've got 1440 dots across by 900 lines down. So the number of dots per inch is pretty high because you've got a very high resolution. Well,
sure.
Icons are you know, just 32 dots. So they've got really small because
okay.
Their dots are smaller. Well, don't give up, though. There are ways to make this work. So first of all, we want to increase the dots per inch on your computer. Now, Vista does this beautifully, but I bet you're on XP still.
XP, yeah.
All right. So
eight.
You could fix this by you're going to go to your display properties control panel.
Okay, I know what you mean.
And there are a couple of things to do. You're going to change the dots per inch, which will enhance a lot of this. And so you go to the settings tab, and in the settings tab, there's an advanced button, and you'll see that the normal size is 96 dpi. And you want to run it at a higher size, probably 120 dots per inch.
Okay.
Now, that seems a little counterintuitive. More dots per inch, wouldn't that be small? But no, it'll make it better. Make it bigger. And then, even if that's not enough, you can even improve it considerably. I always do this, by the way, because, you know, as we get to a certain age, it's hard to read this fine print.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. They're making it smaller and smaller. So, under Appearance, the Appearance tab in Display Control Panel, you can also change the font size to large or even extra large. You can change the pointer. If you go to the mouse control panel, you can change it to a larger pointer, which I always do because the mouse gets smaller too. Everything gets smaller because the resolution is higher.
Uh-huh.
So in the various control panel settings for mouse, fonts, icons can even be made larger. You can make everything bigger.
Okay. So does it also apply then to web pages when I'm on the internet?
Well, changing the DPI changes it globally, so that will help everything. But you may still find that web pages are the text is too small, and you can change that in the browser itself in the view settings. You can make the text, the default text, be larger.
Okay. Well, the page itself, it doesn't fill the whole screen.
Because your screen is bigger. the page is the same size it always was. So you can, you can maximize the window, but most pages, for instance, if you look at our website, leo.am, it's going to, the window's bigger, but the page is the same size. Now, you can mess with that. If you really feel like it, all browsers let you change the CSS, the default CSS style sheet, which will change the size of the fonts, the size of the pages. You can increase these things, but you do it at your peril because most pages are designed to look a certain way, and they don't, if you change the size of the page considerably, the layout may change, menu items may change. Yeah. So first thing to do, and I think you'll find this app helps a lot just in general, change the DPI.
Okay.
Increase it, and it works okay in XP. It works wonderfully in Vista. It really is good.
Okay.
Microsoft's approved it. But yeah, this is normal, John. You got a bigger screen. You'd think everything would get bigger, wouldn't you?
It
gets smaller. You've got more real estate.
I mean, the games, I use a flight simulator, and that fills the whole screen.
Sure it does, and now you see more.
Yes.
Because a game is smart enough to say, okay, he just wants a wider field of vision. But web pages don't work that way.
Could you tell me one more quick question on the same monitor? When I hooked it up, it has the DVI connector and the
VGA,
regular one.
Right, yeah.
GA. Should I keep both of them hooked up?
No, only one.
Only one.
Because your computer has both doesn't mean you need to use both. Use the DVI. That's going to be the higher quality. I presume that this comes up because your video card has both.
Yes, the computer. Correct.
Yeah. Use the DVI one and connect to the DVI on your monitor. That's much better. You don't need
both. I set it up with both of them plugged in.
What's happening.
Well, I think it read it as if I had two monitors.
Might have. Might give you a very confused result. Take off that VGA cable.
Okay.
DVI, you'll find, is much crisper, and it'll give you a better look. Whose monitor did you get? What brand?
It's a Hans G.
And you like it?
So far, yeah.
Good.
I've never had a LCD monitor, and I'm used to the.
You'll come to love it.
Oh, really? Good.
Oh, trust me, there's no flicker. It's a rock solid image. It's much easier on the eyes. I think everybody should use an LCD these days. CRT is so 20th century. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Oh, we're almost done. This is hour number 3 for February the 4th. This is segment number 3. It's a 10-minuter in 3, 2, 1. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Dory is in Malibu. Hello, Dory.
Hi, Leo. You are my hero.
Oh, dear. You're so kind. Hey, did you have snow? Did you have snow in Malibu?
Yeah, and I didn't get to see it, but boy, Canaan Road, couldn't believe it.
Is that weird?
Never saw a site like that.
That is so weird.
Completely. Completely.
Something is wrong with the world. I don't know what it is.
No, there's no global
warming. Dinosaurs are going to be walking the earth before we know it.
Exactly.
We're going backwards. Exactly. Yeah, well, people say, and I've heard Drudge say this, that means there's no global warming. See, it's cold. No. That's the point. Global warming changes climates. It can be colder.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Thought I'd see Al Gore driving around picking up snowballs just to prove his point.
See what I'm saying? It's cold out there. What can
I told you.
I told you so. Get in my Prius. Let's go. So what can I do for you today, Dory?
Well, I've got my husband bought a new Dell laptop, the Inspiron. The model number, I'm not sure.
That's all right.
It's more of a general question.
Yeah.
Two of them. Two general questions about this. When we did the order over the phone with someone as opposed to online, and I asked for a Core 2 Duo processor.
Yes.
And when it came, it was Core Duo. Am I... is there a
big
problem here?
Difference.
Am I?
Yes. Big difference. Now, make sure it really is a Core Duo and not a Core 2. But I would call Dell, and they'll tell you how to do that. And if you ordered a Core 2 and you paid for a Core 2, you don't want
to... I don't think we even paid for a Core 2, though. She just
She misunderstood
listen.
You. She misunderstood
you. Yeah, because I wanted a Core 2 from listening to your show. My husband's going to be using this a lot for photos, video editing, that kind of thing. Is that what we need for that?
Core 2 is better. It's faster. It's not the end of the world. It's funny. I mean, Core Duo was the hottest, greatest thing 4 months ago. So it's not. It's not like you're buying ancient technology. But all of the new Inspirons, I think. Well, no, I guess you could choose a Core Duo, not a Core 2. I mean, I thought they all came with.
I thought it came. It even said on the.
No, you know what I'm looking at. Yeah, that's the top of the line. You can get it with a Core. Just a plain old Core Duo. I don't think it makes that much difference, to be honest with you.
For what he's mostly going to be using it for that. You know,
he'll never know.
Premier Elements. I wanted to know if it was worth the hassle of returning it having them upgrade.
You save money by doing it. I mean, you save $300.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That was the latest and greatest processor a couple of months ago. So, big deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. That makes me feel better.
Yeah.
The other question is a general question. It's something I've always wondered about because I always thought my husband was kind of hard on computers, and I like to pamper them as far as just physically how you take care of them.
Yeah.
And he doesn't tend to shut down his computer very much.
That's
He'll just
okay.
close the laptop
That's
and walk
fine.
Away.
That's fine.
It is.
Yep.
Modern, even if you've got programs going and
you're tied
into the internet.
Yeah.
And
see, here's what happens. Modern computers handle this very well, and this is good. This is thanks to Al Gore. these are now Energy Star compliant and complacent computers. And they, when you shut them the lid like that, they go into a sleep mode. They automatically disconnect from the internet. They power down. They don't turn off. They have low power because they have to continue to refresh the memory.
Right.
But they are in a very low power state. They're asleep and they'll wake up when you open them, and that's perfectly fine. Now, if you really want to go in an even lower power state and you don't mind the slight delay when you open it up, you can go into hibernate mode when you close it. That's a power setting. You
so
can
hibernate is a lower sleep state than standby.
Yeah, let me talk about the three different sleep states. There's off, which is using no power at all. And off, of course, drains the RAM, the memory where all the programs and everything are stored, needs to be refreshed. It will not hold stuff unless it's refreshed with electrical power. So in the off state and the hibernate state, there's no power going to the RAM. You're using almost zero power in hibernate and zero power in off. However, in order for that to work in hibernate, the idea of hibernate, the only difference between hibernate and off is off, you have to reboot the whole machine. The whole machine starts up from scratch, which takes a while. Hibernate, what it does is it takes the contents of the RAM, saves it to the hard drive, so it can reload it. And so you start up right where you were before. All the programs open, the documents, everything. You haven't lost anything. And so it's a little faster than booting from scratch, and everything's going. Sleep, it leaves the programs running. It's continually refreshing the RAM. It's always providing power to the RAM. So everything that was in RAM stays in RAM. So it uses a little more power, not a lot, just a few watts.
Right. But if your laptop isn't plugged in, you're better off to just shut it down.
It will drain it. It will drain it. Yeah,
right.
Shut it down, or hibernate's okay too. Now, you can change in the power settings what happens when you close the lid. So you can tell your Dell, hibernate when I close. But your husband may not like that, because then he opens the lid and it says waking up, and you can see it loading the RAM from hard drive. It just takes, he may be, it depends. It sounds like he's impatient.
Yeah. Okay.
Just a little tad bit impatient.
He has no patience.
Yeah. So for him, it's fine. If it's plugged in, it's fine to close it, even if not. But understand that you can't leave it for days unplugged in. It'll drain.
I just thought maybe it was harder on
computer
itself, the processor.
Nope, it shuts down the hard drive.
I like to shut mine down.
In fact, it's probably harder to shut it down, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
Because it turns off the hard drive, it parks the heads, it's just fine. He's okay.
Oh, good. Now, I have a Sony Vaio laptop, which I just love. It's the cutest little thing.
They're beautiful.
Now, I have to do a total restore on it.
Yep.
My son got a hold of it once, and now it's It doesn't run the same, and I know if I just restore, it'll be fine. Along the way, I've been backing up. I have one of those Macstore OneTouch.
Good for you, Dory.
Drive. Well, I learned my lesson. My laptop got stolen, and I hadn't backed up for 6 months, so that will never happen again.
Yep. It's too bad. That's how we learn, but unfortunately, that's really the only way for most people to learn.
Well, my question is that if I bring files back, I'm just afraid of bringing bad things
off
of my master.
No, no. The only danger is in programs. If you only bring documents, that includes images, music, videos, word processing, only bring documents, you'll be safe. It's the applications that contain the viruses. Now, there are exceptions to that. There are macro viruses that can be embedded in Word documents. We haven't seen a lot of those lately. That's not much of a problem. And then it is theoretically possible for a data file to infect your computer if you have a problem with one of your players. For instance, Microsoft's JPEG format could hide viruses because of a big bug in Microsoft's software. But I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
I would. You can copy all your data. Just don't copy any programs back. Reinstall those.
See, you are my hero. You have put my mind totally at ease about our two laptops.
I think you're doing very well, Dory. I think it sounds like you've got everything well in hand.
Well, I am kind of the local kind of a geek. I'm certainly not on your level, but I enjoy everything computers.
Oh, don't sell yourself short. You sound like a big geek.
Well, actually, I kind of do. I build websites. I do.
It's just, I knew it. See, she's
very
a geek.
Addictive.
Why hide it?
That's right.
Say it loud. I'm geeking proud.
Yes, I've got at least 10 computer books, okay?
Do you really?
I'm sorry.
Oh, you're in deep trouble now.
I've got two in the car here with me.
Oh, Dory.
I've got one on RSS feeds and CSS styles.
Well, you've gone from being a geek to actually having a problem. I'm just teasing you. Anybody who's reading books on CSS is definitely a geek.
Yeah, I guess so. All okay,
right.
I'll wear that hat.
Okay, Dory. Hey, thanks.
Okay, thanks so
Take
much.
Take care. Leo Bye-bye. Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We are taking your calls on Super Bowl Sunday. As I talk, Shuby is typing. Shuby is my I call him my little intern. He is a great, great kid, high school kid who is doing a great job keeping up the website. And so if you want to know more about the stuff we talk about, all the notes, kind of sketchy notes, We're working on him. By the time he gets in college, he's going to be great at note-taking. But links, that's the most important part. All of that stuff is on the website. You just go to KFIAM640.com and click my name under shows. If you see my picture, click my picture. That'll take you to my page on KFI's site, and it's the official website link on that page. That takes you to leo.am. And this is Sunday's show. You click that link, and you will be able to find all the material. I think we will be able to put a link up to my appearances on Regis and Kelly this week. I'm hoping they'll be up there if some good person has taped them or recorded them. Shuby, if you have a link to the video, is it on YouTube? I don't know. Put it up there so people can see those, because it was fun. Talked about TVs and computers and some nice stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. One more segment to go right after this. 10:07. This is February 4th, hour 3, segment 4 and 3, 2, 1. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Just a little bit of time left, and it's Dr. Dean Adel, my good buddy, my pal. We're going to help you keep your health. I listen religiously, very, very health conscious. Between Jillian and Dean, I am set. Harry's on the line from Lancaster. Hello, Harry. Welcome to KFI.
Leo, I need a USB to SCSI cable.
Yeah, I think they make those. They're both.
Does Belkin make one?
I think Belkin. I mean, I know a lot of companies make them.
I'm running one from a. I'm running a USB to Centronics parallel.
Yeah,
cable.
Same idea. You know, it's pretty much the same idea. Here's where I would go to find such a thing: is everythingusb.com. It's a wonderful site for just wacky, weird, and interesting, but also useful USB connectors. And if there is such a kind of cable, everythingusb.com will have it. In fact, there is, because I know there are such cables. A lot of companies make these.
Well,
now, let me ask you, is it going from... Actually, this is important. The direction is important. Is it going from a USB computer to a SCSI device?
Yeah, I've got two Pinnacle 7-inch CD changers.
Optical drives. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that'll work. It can't go the other way.
No.
But you can't go. You can't connect to a computer. I mean, this would be unlikely anyway. A computer SCSI port to a USB device, but vice versa, it can go that way.
No, I've got to go from a PC to SCSI devices and read them.
Yep. A lot of companies make these. Here's one from Custom Sensors Incorporated at USB-port.com. Oh, discontinued. How dare they? But that was these are not cheap. It's $69, and that's. You know,
yeah, so what?
Yeah, if you've ever bought a SCSI cable, you know they're always expensive.
I usually use them on my Macs, but I want to run them from PC into these Pinnacle drives. And,
I see them on Amazon.com, and it looks like they're around.
Okay, is everything USB.com?
That's where I would go. And you know, if you're if you're having any problems or questions, they're great. You can call them, and they know you. That's all they do is USB, so they know their stuff.
Any references for PC card devices?
For SCSI?
No. I need a PC card memory card reader for my Secure Digital and Compact Flash and things like that.
SanDisk makes very good ones.
The PC card slot
version. Yeah, there are a lot of different ones for PC card slots, you bet.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for the call. Let's see if we can get one more in before the end of the show. Rick in Los Angeles, KFI.
Yes.
Hello, Rick.
Hello, Leo. I'm listening to you or talking to you while working and listening. Can you hear me?
As long as you don't tell the boss, it's okay with me.
Well, I am the boss.
Oh, then don't. Now, this is going to be a challenge. What can I do for you, Rick?
Well, Bluetooth. That's the subject.
Yes.
In fact, my Bluetooth is so bad, your assistant made me take it off.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have to say, Bluetooth can often sound very bad. It's a Bluetooth headset for your cell phone or for your handheld? Your handset? Whatever it's called.
It's for my handheld cell phone. I got a Motorola H700. I used to have an HS850, which fell into the pool once and been run over twice, and it's still lasted a few months until I
I'll give you the names
died.
Of a couple of good quality. I think Bluetooth in general is a little noisy. My experience has been I'm not thrilled with Bluetooth, but if you want the best quality Bluetooth, there are a couple of companies that make pretty good stuff. One that's very good, it's got noise canceling, it's called The Boom.
The Boom.
At TheBoom.com.
Okay.
And, they do noise canceling stuff that gives you the best audio I've heard.
A lot better than the Motorola H700.
I haven't tried the H700, but I tell you, the problem in general with Bluetooth is that the bandwidth on Bluetooth is low. So you want, if anybody yet makes Bluetooth 2 headsets, but if they did, you'd see an improvement because Bluetooth 2 has a much higher data rate. And I think part of the problem with Bluetooth is it's just 8 kilobits. It doesn't have a lot of bandwidth to send data down. Who else makes a good sounding Bluetooth? I like the Cardos. I've been using a Cardo for a while, and they're less expensive, but I think they're very good. Who else makes good ones? I don't know. You know, this would be a good one to open up to our listeners. Maybe they have some suggestions. If it weren't the last call of the day, I would. I'll tell you what, we'll talk about it maybe next week. What are the best sounding Bluetooth headsets? I've given up, to be honest with you. Between the audio quality and the dropouts, and you know, some of this may be because you're in a noisy environment. You're in not noisy in terms of noise, but in terms of radio interference. Could cause a problem. I'm out of time. Have a great game. The big game coming up. Look for my buddies, Callie and Callie Lewis from GeekBrief.tv and Kevin and Alex from Dignation. They're going to be on the GoDaddy ad. That's kind of cool. And I'll be back here next week to talk tech with you. All right. Will you join me? All right. Dr. Dean's coming up next. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.